I'll lay out my day, and then I think it'd be cool if you just freaking say, "Hey, Adam, this is what I would do to make it more optimal." Are you cool with that?
That's perfect. That's honestly one of the most common questions. We were at an end of the school year party yesterday, and one of the moms came up to me who like can gather just my social media that I do health and fitness. And she was like, "Oh, I want to get better at health. Like, can you help me?" Like, and she was just telling me she's doing keto and some other things like that. And so it's so common for people to be like, "This is kind of what I'm doing. Is it right?" And so I think it'll be really helpful for people to hear how we dissect if it's quote unquote right, and like what is like optimal or what feels good for different reasons. So yeah, let's dive in. And I guess if you want to just like go through your day or share.
Yeah, and I think it's important. People should know, well, what's the goal? Well, I train, my style of training is bodybuilding. I want to be in a small deficit, right? And I'm always, of course, I always want to increase my strength and whatnot. But for me, my goal is how do I, with the work from home life, optimize my food, use my food to optimize my training, and then what's the best time to do cardio? So I'll walk through my day and then you tell me what you would do differently. I'll go through the whole day first. Wake up in the morning. This week I wake up at like 6:30, right? Because I'm training in the middle of the day. I start work at 7, so there's like 30 minutes before. I have not done any cardio in the morning, which I would be surprised. We have a walking pad. I have a walking path outside, so I'm sure we could probably put in my steps in the morning, right? I'm sure you'll do that, but I haven't been. I'm being honest. I haven't been doing any cardio at that time. I drink right away in the morning. I have a full water gallon, you know that, but I also have right away. I take my shaker cup, 20 fluid ounces of water, Propel, and a small scoop of like sea salt just to get some salt in right away in the morning. That's what I do. That's the first thing I drink. Katie makes a coffee every morning, so I always have some form of like a coffee waiting for me. And then probably around 8:30, I'll eat like an egg sandwich, right? And I can tell you the macros on it. It's gonna be like two eggs, egg whites, some chicken deli meat, two pieces of bread that are wheat bread. So that's like, it's usually the whole thing comes out to be like 40-ish grams of protein. Let's call it 350, 400 calories, right? And then before I lift, I'll have like a protein bar and a banana a few hours later. Then I train around noon to 1:30. Come home, drink this protein shake that I'm drinking right now, right? And my post shake is usually chocolate Fairlife, a banana, peanut butter. There's ice in there too, right? Usually, depending. Sometimes I do two scoops. Today I did one scoop, right? So we're looking at anywhere from like 40 to 50, 60 grams of protein, but it can vary. Curious what you think. What you think you would do there? Might do something different. Some people like food. I will tell you, post training, I've never been one that wants to eat food right away. I've always loved a smoothie. Just giving you my preference. Katie and I on Sunday nights, we plan out what we'll eat for dinner. So it's always like one of three things. It's usually a chicken bowl. Grilled chicken in a bowl, rice. I'll add bacon sometimes, but usually that's what it is. Steak bowls, same thing, or sweet potato fries. And then Katie loves ramen, so we'll do ramen with shrimp, or ramen with chicken, or ramen with steak. Those are like the most often dinner meals because I can track them and they're a lot easier. Plus they're pretty protein heavy. That's a normal day. That's literally what it would be. I could track out the actual calories, but you can actually tell me what you think, how you would do it any differently than that. Go for it.
Yeah. So you eat basically four meals. You eat like a breakfast, a pre-workout, a post-workout, and a dinner.
Yeah. I try to put a snack, right? Because I have that egg sandwich at like 8:30, and then I'm going to train at noon. I like a small something, you know what I mean? Before. But I'd be curious what you think. Like, would you wait, eat closer, then train? Like, what would you do?
Yeah. I think there's like, so this is perfect because we can really dive in. I think backing up to one of the first things you said is getting radical clarity on like, what is your goal right now? Right? Like, of course, you're like getting a little stronger, slight deficit, whatever it is. Like, if picking one, what's your main priority? And is it like, okay, I want to lose 10 pounds. I would like to lose body fat, right? Because I was coaching someone in our like group coaching call, and she was telling me she's a runner and she's doing a Ragnar, and she's like a longer leg. And she's like, I'm practicing, my runs are getting longer. And I'm in a deficit right now. And she's like, I notice I'm just getting more fatigued during my runs. should I increase my carbs, like post or pre-run or whatever it is? And I asked, I said, what's your main goal right now? Is your main goal fat loss right now? Or is your main goal like doing better on this run? Right. And I think we touched on, I actually think I touched on this last time, but she was like, my goal is fat loss. Right. And so in that essence, if your goal is fat loss, then you're going to just be hungry. Like you're just going to feel a little bit more fatigued. Your performance isn't going to be at that great. And so I think there's definitely a way to like optimize your nutrition to enhance your performance. But if your main goal is fat loss, then the macros at the end of the day are going to be king as far as like getting you to your goal and kind of setting that up.
There's no doubt that's the goal, right? Is to be in a loss to reduce fat. I weigh 216 pounds at 5'8", right? So I think ideally, I don't like to put a number because I can be honest with you, bro. I've been looking great at 202, right? So I'm not going to be like, my goal is to lose 15 pounds, right? It's like everyone's body looks different at different weights. So like that's where it's like the goal would be to lose body fat, but I wouldn't know how much, but definitely enough where I'm happy with how I look. Do I like how I look right now? I do, but I don't look my best. There's no doubt about that, right?
Yeah. And I think that's a really good and a great approach for this too is like, I'm going to be in a deficit and continue that until I feel good. And honestly, that's kind of Dennis has been doing something similar. I mean, Den's down like almost 25 pounds. And so he's just kind of been like cruising. And he was talking to him. And he's like, I think I'm going to keep it running. It's just like until I hit that point where I'm like, yeah, damn. He like, we have a pool. And he's like, when I feel like I want to clean the pool with my shirt off and cars are driving by, then we've nailed it. Then we've nailed it. And so I think whatever that is, like unapologetically owning your goal and saying, okay, I'm going to be in a deficit until I feel like whatever your barometer is. Like for some women, it's like, I feel really confident in a swimsuit. For some people, maybe like lifting in a cutoff. It could be cleaning the pool without a shirt on. It could be like, you know what, that I just like, I feel comfortable when any photo is taken of me. You kind of know when you hit that like happy weight in place. And so knowing the deficit is the priority there, that would be kind of the biggest needle mover that we would want to have. If you're, do you have a certain goal that you're aiming for with protein?
Yeah, so like it's crazy, right? So many people say 1 gram of protein per body for how much you weigh. But to me, it's like, I think you know this to get real specific, but what's my lean body mass? My lean body mass isn't 218 because I'm 218 and I'm like is super lean. So like I always vary it, right? Like I want to be at least 190 grams of protein in a day, like 185, but I don't freak out if I don't. I usually always hit that, right? Or more. So I would say anywhere like 185, 190 is like the floor, but usually 205 to 210. That's kind of the range I like to be in.
Okay. I would say that's good. I was going to say 200. Like, it's kind of like that ballpark. Like, I would always say, like, 0.8, very low end for someone. 1 gram per pound is a good spot. As long as you're within relative health, if you're someone who has like 30, 40 pounds to lose, then I just kind of say like 1 pound for your ideal body weight. And so I think 200, and you're not going to go wrong with going a little bit over. So if you have 200, the first thing I would do is kind of just like divvy it up amongst your four meals. So this is when you can just break it down and make it a lot more simple for yourself when it comes to tracking is like, okay, I want to have 50 grams of protein in every meal. That would be a great ballpark to making sure because when we're talking about strength, recovery, building muscle protein synthesis, you have to get enough to stimulate it. And to stimulate it, it's going to be around like 30, 40 grams. I mean, there's studies that show different, but like really the lowest is like 30. And so you want to get a bolus. So sometimes if I'm looking at someone's macros and they have like a snack and it's like 20 grams of protein or like 16 grams of protein, and they're like, oh, it's yeah, it does, but it's not enough to actually like stimulate muscle protein synthesis. You're not actually doing anything there. So having at least four bouts where you're doing that. So if you keep your four meals and make sure that each meal has around, I would say minimum 40 of 50 would probably be ideal of amount of protein in it. Would be a really good spot to go in.
Which is really easy because before I switched to middle of the day, when I was morning, like super early, bro, I was having 3 big meals a day. I'm talking big grams of protein because it was easier. But I was like, now it's 4, so I can, it'll be a little bit easier for me to do it anyways.
Yeah, that's perfect. Perfect. And I think four is what's shown in the research as optimal, right? I think it's important to understand that like optimal is what you can stick with consistently over time. And if you can do four, that's a win-win. If it's three, then it's three. Five is okay too, but four is really a good sweet spot where it also correlates with managing hunger the best. And so looking at that, now breaking down your like peri-workout nutrition, I think one of the best things that we can do is like minimizing fat and fiber. around those meals so that they're digested more quickly. And so making sure that you're having carbohydrates within those. Now we would want to know, like, we'd have to figure out exactly like what your caloric intake would need to be to put you in a deficit to make sure that that's happening. Well, let's say if we wanted to go with like, I don't know, 200 grams of carbs too, something like that, like 200 grams of carbs, then you're looking at, right, like I would put at least 50 in meal two and at least 50 in meal three. Like, it put a good chunk of them because that way you're going in and you can get a pump and you can fill up your glycogen stores and you can also replenish them after. And so when you're planning that meal, something like a protein shake and a banana is a good one. I would want to like kind of see with your carbohydrates if you could do more like glucose based instead of fructose based. So bananas, fructose, doing a glucose based one. So maybe that's I don't know, an English muffin after, like an English muffin with your banana or rice cakes, something that is going to be more of like a starchier carb that you can have and digest post-workout. And similarly with pre would be a good spot to be in. Now, meal one and meal four, that would probably be more of your my okay. So like one thing that went off when you're ready today, I'm like, bro, let's have some vegetables, my friend. I've
You
told this
saw
to Dennis. I
the
tell
cake. She's gonna laugh when she hears this.
I literally tell Dennis, I'm like, where did you have your vegetables? And so
Oh,
you need to
I
have vegetables.
need vegetables, I agree.
Frozen vegetables in your breakfast. You could do like a breakfast skillet in the morning. It might take a little bit longer to make. It may take a little bit longer to eat, but I would definitely consider some micronutrients, some fiber as a whole. Like I was like,
What would
that's
you toss in? So I have an egg sandwich, right? What would you? I mean, I could toss it on there, like, but like, what would you add to that? Because I'm already making that.
if
Okay.
you're making, if you have an egg sandwich and you want to just pair something with it, you could like, I guess it depends on kind of whatever you veggies you like. You could like slice up some bell peppers and just eat bell pepper sticks. Like sometimes if you're like working, if you're like, I get my work started and you want to be, have something, I think I always think very logistically when we're planning meals. And so I'm like, okay, what's something you could be nibbling on while you're typing on your computer? And so if you have baby carrots with it, if you have bell peppers with it, if you have any like something that you can grab and do while you're working if you want. And also too, I sometimes say like doesn't necessarily need to quote unquote like make sense. It could be like not something that's traditional, but I'm having this egg sandwich. It has carbs, it has fats, protein in it. It's I really enjoy it. I love it. It's well balanced. Okay, cool. I just need to add some veg to it. I'm gonna do some baby carrots
And
on
I'm
the
gonna
side.
guess, man, I could have like a smaller bowl of baby carrots, and it's not like I need to really worry about the calorie intake there, right? Like, it's not gonna be much, right? Or especially bell peppers, I'd imagine there's not a lot of calories there. Am I wrong on that? So we're like, what
Um,
do you
I
think?
think there okay there's not like a ton of calories in it doing like a small bowl or having something on the side, but if you're in a deficit, I would factor everything in just purely due to the like we don't want to have frustration. There's no reason to have frustration with it. There's no reason. Like I it's so funny, I was teaching something to a group of coaches, like to a group of other coaches who are online, and I went through the whole thing, the whole like it was about nutrition and like dialing people in. And someone said, they were like, what do you do if you hit a plateau? If one of your clients hits a plateau? And I literally had to think about that. And I was like, I put this whole thing together and I didn't even think about plateaus. And I'm like, because why would someone hit a plateau? Like, I don't understand. I like conceptually, like a deficit works 100% of the time.
Right.
I've never had an instance. And I've even done trainings about like metabolism and how that affects with hormones and all the things. I've never had an instance where someone defied the law of thermodynamics, like defying gravity, like, and it's like just not losing weight. It's doing things like, oh, I didn't track my veggie. I didn't track those things. And it adds up. Even things like there's
The
so many things.
sauces. Sauces,
Yeah.
people are bad with sauces.
Sauces are a big one. Supplements are a big one. Seasonings, like, even like you go and it could be like, oh, buttery garlic seasoning. When you turn around, the first ingredient is dehydrated butter. What do you think that's pure fat? Everything but the bagel seasoning, one of those containers is 500 calories. It's pure seeds. Seeds are pure fat. And so all of those things, like there is nothing that is calorie free, even if it's like gum. Actually, one time I was doing like a full day of my eating and I went through and I was like, these are things that most people probably wouldn't track. And I was like, two Splenda in my coffee, a piece of gum before and after the gym, a seltzer water over here, my fish oil and my supplements. And like, I had another one that was like an oil-based supplement. I don't know, a scoop of BCAAs, whatever it is. a little bit of this seasoning over here. And I went to Starbucks and I got two stevia in it and a splash of unsweetened almond milk, whatever it is. And I kind of just added up and I was like, there's 350 calories here.
Right there.
350 calories times 7 days.
7 days, buddy.
I mean, that's over 2,000 calories.
And if you didn't track those, but you thought you were in a 500 calorie deficit, you're in a 150 calorie deficit, right?
Yeah. And that's really, and then people get so frustrated and then they think, oh, it's my metabolism. Oh, it's my hormones. Oh, it's cortisol, whatever it is. And it's like, nah, you're just eating more than you think. And so when it comes to that, I always, if I'm like starting with a new client, we're going, I'm like, track everything. It touches your lips. It goes on that tracker for the beginning.
I love it.
Not that you have to track that way forever, because I haven't honestly tracked in probably like 5 years. And it's so you can gain awareness. I want you to know what has calories and what's not. Because a lot of times too, like people will say, oh, I started losing weight when I started eating more, right? I have so many client studies where I could show you their trackers of their weight, what they're consuming, their nutrition label. And it looks like from the input, everything they're doing, they're eating more. They're not eating like that. That's impossible. They're not eating more and losing weight. That never actually happens. What happens is one of two things. When someone starts with an online coach and you see a coach that says, this girl came to me eating 1200 calories and now she's eating 1500 and look at all of these results she's having. As someone who sees behind the curtains of all of it, who lives it, who's done it for years, there's one of two things happening. One, they actually learned how to track and they learned how to track correctly.
They
and so
tracking
now they're tracking. Like I have one of my clients send a message. She's like, I can't believe I'm eating like literally like 50 more grams of carbs with you and like 20 more grams of fat. My calories are so much higher. This is the leanest I've ever been. And I'm like, I really want to take credit for everything, but really you just learned how to track and being like, I'm doing all of this. And so there's that. And, or they now have accountability with a coach and they're not overeating or binge eating or like having extra nibbles, bite, six, taste to whatever degree that overeating is, bite, six, and taste, or like, I'm just like binge eating and saying F it. And that stops and that creates a huge deficit over time. And so, because sometimes people will come in frustrated and they're like, maybe I just need to eat more. And I was like, if you eat more, you are going to gain more.
Yeah.
Like that's, let's call a spade what it is. And so I think just kind of understanding what that is, because even too, like when I was talking to someone who was doing keto and she was like, she said, I'm eating like 15 grams of carbs a day. And I came over to that. I was like, that's, she's not though. Like that's almost,
right.
That's
She doesn't understand
impossible.
What 15
That's,
carbs a day would look like.
There's 15 grams of carbs in asparagus.
Right.
Like you can eat 15 grams of carbs in veggies. Like it's very easy to add those up. And I'm like, because I'm like, she's probably counting net carbs or something else like that and whatever else that is. But I think this, anyone listening who's like, I want to like edit my full day of eating, or I want to know that there's nothing that has 0 calories. If it sounds or looks too good to be true, it is. And when you are first learning and first stepping into it, track everything just from an awareness standpoint. I also hate the saying, it's like, if you can't see yourself doing it for a decade, don't do it for 10 days. Or so, like I've heard sayings like that. Like, if you can't see yourself doing it forever, it's not sustainable. And I'm like, that is the biggest crock of shit ever, because anything new that you do is overwhelming. Do you know how overwhelming it is when you start driving when you're 16 and you're trying to pay attention? You're like, I'm like, am I pressing on the gas too hard? Not hard enough? Am I turning on the turn signal? Do I
that
go
left
here?
Hand turn is tough when you first start driving, right? Or the right hand turn, because the car is up, you know what I mean? You can't gauge it.
The mental focus that it takes is like insane. Or when you're first starting a new job. Like when you first started this job, you're like, okay, how do I do this file? How do I log in? What do I do? Do I email this person? Who was that person that was in charge of this? Your brain is working so hard. When you first get into lifting, when you squat the first time, you're like, are my knees here? How long do I go? Do my hips? I don't know. Is that hard? How low do I go? Is that 90 degrees?
Who's watching me? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, everything. Like any single skill that you do, whether it's work, working out, things around your house, adulting, whatever it is overwhelming at first. And then you practice and you get better at the skill and you learn hacks and you learn tweaks and you get to the point where you can drive while you're talking to someone, listening to a podcast, not even paying attention, not like half kind of looking, and you make it there. You can go in and just grab a bar, throw it on your back, squat without, like your body just knows it. Same with tracking macros.
You could literally be at the gym leaving, get a text from Ariel that she's ready to do the pod, call her 3 times. She doesn't answer because she's always on Do Not Disturb. And you still know where you're going to get home to get on time for the podcast.
Yeah. Exactly. I love it. Right. It's like, it's so funny because there's so many other thoughts going on in your head when you're doing it. But when you start tracking macros, you're going to go, oh my, like everyone has this. So if you have this, good, you're on the right track. It's going to get easier. Oh my God, this is overwhelming. What do you mean I have to put everything in? I have to put this on the food scale too. I have to find the right entry.
I like tracking my food. I've done it a long time. When I bring up to you the carrots, the reason I said I'd imagine it's a low amount of calories. What I really meant by that, I apologize if I did confuse you. I'm happy you said all this because it is important. And it's a good reminder to me, like, dude, you gotta track it. Is it's flexible then, right? Like I don't have to be as worried. Like, there are some foods that like peanut butter, man. Peanut butter, you gotta not only track it, but you can't have it as much. But carrots, it's like I can probably get away with a little more volume on the carrots and still be in a deficit tracking it. Does that make sense? I don't know
Yeah.
if
I get what you're saying. And that's really helpful. And I think that it's like, it's knowing it like that again, when you're, if you're overwhelmed, if you feel like it's a lot of work right now, good. It's supposed to be because it's a skill. And there will be a time where you are like, for example, let's say I can have carrots with this meal. I can have some veggies with this meal. And you decide I'm going to have 125 grams of carrots and you weigh it out for 7 days, maybe even 2 weeks. By week three, you'll know approximately what 150 carrots or 125 grams of carrots looks like. You'll know, and you won't need the food scale. You won't need to do all the little stuff, but weighing it at first. So you have an idea because like, what is a medium banana? Like when you say a medium, like a banana can vary from 30 grams of carbs to 70 grams of carbs.
They're so very, like, I actually like getting the small ones. 100 grams of a banana, 80 to 100 is like usually what I put in my shakes because I measure it every time, but I kind of have an idea of the macros I go with it. But I still weigh it. I like what you're saying. It's funny you mentioned that because I track peanut butter in my shakes and everything all the time that I can tell you what 16 ounces or whatever, 16 grams on the scale. I know, I can tell you, I can do it in one scoop. I know exactly how much because 16 is half of the 32 that is a full serving, right?
Yeah. So I think that's perfect. And so the more dense, like I would say fat sources, things like peanut butter, oil, avocado, obviously those are whole food ones, nuts, things like that. I would absolutely weigh those because they're so easy to overdo and they are really dense. Speaking of that, when it comes to like your shake post-workout, I mean, you could have the peanut butter in it. I think you could do without it.
Okay.
Because really, we're looking at it. And so like you have the four meals set up, you're going to get around 40 to 60 grams of protein each. Ideally, like 50 is probably going to be that middle part for protein. Make sure that you have carbs pre and post-workout.
So you're saying remove maybe the banana from the shake. Do the shake. Rice cakes would be okay with you.
Yeah, I think rice cakes, and you could do some of the banana. Again, it depends on like exactly where it would put your carbs overall for the day. But having a faster digesting both carb and protein is going to be good. Like a shake is good post-workout because it's fast digesting. It has quick gastric emptying. It goes to your stomach really quick. And so there's a lot of benefits of it. Peanut butter, having fat and or fiber at that meal will slow it down. And really we want to repair, heal and have it go to your muscles quickly. And so I think that would be an easy way to put you in a further deficit and have a better recovery from that standpoint. And then when it comes to your dinner meal, I think the biggest thing is like being cognizant of how much rice you're having, how much noodles you're having, how many carbs you're having in that meal. Because at the end of the night, you're relaxing, you're having a good meal.
Yeah,
it's very easy to be like, oh, let me just, you know, this is about 200 grams. And then it's like, you know, three, whatever it is. Rice is also very tricky. I think this is something else to remember for everyone. If you're tracking, the most accurate way to weigh or track anything is in the raw state. So putting it in the raw state is going to be the most like accurate way you can do it. It can vary so much. Rice is one of those. Dennis and I have been like playing with different, because I like my rice more like mushy, sticky, and he likes more like normal rice. And so it was so funny because I was looking at him like, if I didn't know how to weigh rice, I was like, I would be so off by how I cook mine. If I weighed it cooked, if I weighed my rice cooked, it would be drastically different than what I'm actually consuming because of how much water I added to it versus how much, like Dennis and I could both take, if Dennis cooked rice how he liked it and I cooked rice how I liked it, and we both took 200 grams of cooked rice, mine would probably be like, I don't know, like 30 carbs, 25, 30 carbs, and his would probably be like 40 to 50 carbs.
Yeah, because yours is heavier.
Yeah, mine's heavier. It's heavier, but it's heavier because, well, no, same weight, but it wouldn't be as many carbs because more of it would be water. More of the wheat is water because it's mushy and sticky. More of his weight is actual carb because it's more rice. And so same with turkey.
If you weighed it before, it wouldn't matter, right?
If you weighed it before. Yeah, if we weighed it dry, it'd be the same. Another one is like meat is a huge one. I was telling Dennis, I was like, I remember very distinctly when I first learned like to weigh your meat raw, or like at least I have a reel I made on like how to do the conversion if you want to weigh it cooked. It's like, because everything is so different. But I was in prep, it was 2016, end of 2016. And we were first like really doing macros. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do 4 ounces of chicken or something like that. I do everything grams. So 112 grams of chicken. And I was like, oh, I want to make my chicken shredded this week. And so I made it shredded. And then I put in 112 grams into my little container that I had. And I was like, that is so much chicken.
Way more than what I cooked.
I was like, that is so much chicken. I was like, oh my God, this much chicken. So I remember texting my coach and I was like, I shredded my chicken. It looks different. I'm probably going to regret asking this, but like, should I be weighing it raw? He's like, yeah, weigh everything raw. And so this week, I have actually ground turkey and I made it into like little like meatballs kind of.
Yeah.
And they're each of my like servings is 130 grams. Cause like 130, I weighed 130 grams raw, made into little balls, cooked it. And I took one of the little baggies and I'm like, people don't realize how much it's dehydrated. And so I weighed it out and 130 grams raw. Like what you would track when I weighed it cooked was only 78 grams.
That doesn't shock me though, because chicken's like that. Like if I did 2 servings of chicken, because I cut it with scissors, my chicken breast, then I cook it. And then if you try to weigh, it would be like 1.3 of it. Like, you know what I mean? Like instead
yeah,
of two.
It is.
Yeah.
People don't realize how much water is really in that. And so the raw state, when you get it and it's like not cooked yet, the macros on the back of the tag or the macros that you're tracking, that is what it's for, is accounting for the weight in it.
Yeah.
So because it's accounting for the weight in it, that's how you have to track it if you want to be accurate. Because like, even though protein is an amazing macronutrient, it can help recover muscle. It has a higher thermic effect of food. It's harder to turn to body fat. It doesn't mean protein still can't put you in a surplus.
Right.
So like at some point it can turn into body fat and it can convert. And so like, if I were to take the turkey and I went into my Fitness Pal and I tracked 130 grams, but I weighed it cooked, I'd be having probably close to 230 grams. And that is a substantial difference in my caloric intake over the course of the day, week, month. And I just share it because I think like that's one, like, I don't think that people realize how much tracking macros is a skill and how many nuances there are of what you're having, how to track, what labels say, what FDAs can regulate, that sugar alcohol actually does have calories in it. Something can say 0 calories, sugar alcohol. So carbs and protein are 4 calories per gram. Fat is 9 calories per gram. Sugar alcohols are 3 calories per gram.
Wow. I wouldn't know that. That's the one I wouldn't know. That'd be the one on the test. I'd be like, I don't know. I got to ask Ariel for that one.
No, that's it. And so because it's not a macronutrient, it is not considered part of the caloric total. And so, and it's also different. Like if you go to Woodman's or like a grocery store and you know, like I can, if anyone's listening in Rockford, right? Like if you go to Woodman's, you know how there are protein bars in the protein section and then there are protein bars in the natural foods section. There's two different sections and you'll notice this. And this is like at Target, they do this too. In other stores, you'll go to the pharmacy section and there's a stack of protein bars. And then when you're in the grocery store part, there's a stack of protein bars and they're separate. The reason they're separate is because companies can register as a food item. Therefore, they need to comply with FDA, or they can register as a supplement and they can do whatever they want. Oh. And so protein bars that are in the supplement section are generally off. Like I love me a Quest bar, but even Quest bars aren't accurate. Like the cookie dough Quest bar, I think it's like actually 230 calories. And on the bar, it says 190. I am such a, I don't like calories. I've never had anyone count calories that I've worked with, because the way, especially in 2025, that nutrition labels are manipulated, it's so easy to overdo. Like when it comes to serving sizes, the FDA doesn't have a set serving size for certain things. You get to pick your serving size. So if you turn an item around, it may say the serving size is like, I've literally seen this 0.8 of a gram. If they just literally have the random thing, because then they get to round down, because you can round down to the nearest from a 5 to a 0. And so they can list it as 0 calories. And
then look more attractive, right?
They look more attractive because like you're looking at the marketing. Like even gum, like there's so many things. Propel, like there are Gatorade. Gatorade Zero would be like zero calories, but two carb. Like, how's the math mathing there? It's like they just round down.
Well,
So
let me ask that though. In the morning, the first thing I drink, water, Propel, a scoop of sea salt to get salts. Would you optimize? Would you do something different? Because you just mentioned Propel. Would you say you don't need the Propel, just do the water? Because I've always been under the assumption for like 10 years, you wake up in the morning, your body needs water and electrolytes. Like, that's what I've always been under the assumption of. Am I wrong?
Yeah. I think it's helpful. I don't like, you'd probably pick one. You probably don't need the sea salt and the Propel.
What does Ariel do? That's what I want to know. What do you think I brought you here for? What does Ariel drink in the morning?
I just drink plain water. I
Just
drink
your
plain water.
okay, okay,
Yeah.
okay.
I drink it. I just drink some plain water in the morning. And then, yeah, I mean, like, I do have a drink where I will mix a scoop of that magnesium, glutamine, and a little apple cider vinegar. I have that in the morning and things like that. I don't add any electrolytes to my day at all.
Gotcha.
Because I think the thing about it is like, is it good to have sodium? I think everything has a pendulum swing. So sodium, you know, there was like this movement of like, don't have sodium. It causes high blood pressure and like you can't have it, right? So there's that. And then people swung it. So like no one's having any sodium. It's like, no, like we didn't need to go completely zero sodium. So people swing back and it's like, let me have these electrolyte packets and all these things. More than likely, you are getting enough sodium from your diet alone. You don't need to add extra. Propel, a bottle of Propel has somewhere in the ballpark of 400 milligrams of sodium.
By the way, my Propel, I just do a little packet. I have the little packets at home. So I toss a little packet in my water.
So the packet might not even have as much as the normal drink does. Like Element, you know, Element's a super common, like electrolyte thing. It's 1,000 milligrams of sodium. Especially if you are a female listening, you do not need 1,000 milligram packet of sodium. If you use things like, because for example, egg whites have a shit ton of sodium in them. If you season your food with anything, like I use light salt, actually. Like I use light salt. If you use normal
So,
salt,
remember how we got salt right by the computer? It's just stuff.
Because like most of us are going to add a little bit of salt to our food anyways. If you use like pink salt or whatever it is, most of those are about for a fourth of a teaspoon. A fourth, it's like licking it, right? Like a fourth of a teaspoon, it's normally around 500 milligrams of sodium. And so most people will probably sprinkle a full teaspoon on their food in one meal. So
Definitely.
that means you're getting five times four, like 2000 in one. And a lot of times people get frustrated because of scale and or fluctuations. I can't actually, this happened also too in our group call where we were calling and someone was telling me, she's like, I'm so frustrated. The scale's stuck. I'm like, tell me what you're having. And then she's goes in. I was like, are you having any supplement? She was like, oh, well, I have this electrolyte packet. And it wasn't like an Element or a brand that was similar, had 1,000. I was like, stop having that. And so she just literally changed nothing, dropped the Element packet or whatever had like 1,000 milligram sodium. Within the next week, she dropped 3 pounds.
Amazing.
And she goes, I was just cognizant of my sodium.
To wrap it up, I want to say, let's go high level. This is what I got out of our convo. Do you have a question? One, I'm going to go for 200 grams of protein, 200 grams of carbs. I was thinking while I was looking at this, that's about 1600 calories, obviously, on the dot, right? So then what I've found in my little research of like MacroFactor, ChatGPT, based off my metrics, saying like 2300 to 2400 calories should put me in a deficit. Okay, a 500 calorie deficit. I'm totally comfortable starting there. If we say it's 2300, to fill in the fat, it's like 75 grams of fat. Would you be comfortable with me doing 75 grams of fat? Because we didn't get the fat.
Yeah. So, how many calories did you have left over? 300, you said.
Well, we're at 1600 from fat, from carbs and protein, because 800
okay.
is 800. That's like 700 calories, right? To fill into 2300 ish.
Yeah.
What would you say? Would you say fill it in with fats, or how would you go about it?
You could probably do so. I would keep the 200 protein pretty. That's like a good kind of like good spot for that. You'd probably go like 65 fat, 60
Uh-huh.
fat. I was thinking like 60 fat. Like it depends how. Okay, so this is a caveat. Like we talked about, how accurately are you going to track? Are you
Track it very accurately.
like cooking spray, like all those little things.
That's the only thing I would track. Cooking spray. I ain't gonna track that. Would you track that? That's crazy.
I would, if you are, it depends. Yeah, actually, because it makes a big difference, right? Because like, look at it. So, right.
Like,
this
no, dude, I just gave you a whole soliloquy about how important it is.
Well, it depends. In your situation, this is what you told me, right? So, like looking at some of your meals, there's two variables of cooking oil spray. Cooking oil spray can be, or cooking oil spray can be, are you cooking on a cast iron? Are you cooking on a ceramic, whatever it is?
Listen,
And
when I cook, it's this
I
area.
think, yeah, like, wait, oh my gosh, no, everything I say is because I did it myself. My prep 2015, that's when I did. And I remember my coach was like, send me a video of how you're like spraying before you're cooking your thing. And he's like, I said spray it, not deep fry it. And I was like, what do you mean? And I think you'd be surprised. Do this one time, and anyone can do this. So cooking oil spray, that bottle of Pam is just oil. There's nothing else in it with oil, and then propellant to make it mist. And so put it on a food scale, hit tear, so it's at zero. Spray whatever you spray in your can, in your pan, and then put it back on. See how much oil you lost, because that's what it's weighing. It does not weigh air, it's weighing the oil you lost. I think you would be surprised. And so for every gram of oil that you spray is a gram of fat. And so very easily, I don't think most people spray about 5 grams. And so if you're cooking eggs in a pan for the morning, if you're cooking chicken or a steak in a pan for evening, that's 10 grams of fat. So if I tell you, hey, let's do 60, but you're not counting cooking oil spray, you're doing 70. And that's a big difference over, and that's the only saying, that's saying like, you don't cook anything else in a cooking oil spray. And it's saying it's just five. I'd be like, do it today and see what it's at.
I'm going to.
Now, you don't need to weigh it every time. What I like to say with people with like cooking oil spray, if you have it, like if you have a tendency, like I go a swirl around this pan and then go in the middle or whatever you do, what track it like or weigh it out like the first 2 or 3 times. And then in every meal that you cook in a pan or whatever it is, just add like the 5 grams of cooking oil or
Definitely.
whatever it is.
But okay,
Like,
so go ahead.
even I just want to say a hack for this. Like, this is where a little bit like people don't realize whether you're in bodybuilding or not. Like, Dennis has eggs every morning, but we have this silicone thing that I got off of Amazon to cook eggs. And so he pours his eggs in there and puts in the microwave primarily because you don't have to use oil in it. And so
I was
you
just
save
gonna be
oil.
like, how do you cook them without oil, bro? Was gonna be my next question, and there you go, right?
Yeah, you can use the silicone thing and cook it without oil there. Obviously, you can do like hard boiled eggs. Sometimes with veggies, I love cooking things in the air fryer. You could also use like a broth. Sometimes people do things like that, but it's just something to account for. So I would say, like, again, if you're going to count everything, I think you could maybe do like the 70 fat, but, or if you're going to track everything, if you're not, I would say closer to 60.
I'm with that. Okay, 200, 260. Love that. The last thing that I wanted to make sure we get touched on, would you, again, I work from home. So the only time I'm going to move and step is when I either go lift. Katie and I like to go after dinner. That's probably 3 times a week in the summer, 3 to 4 times a week of walking. But it sounds like you're saying after every time I eat, try to get 10 minutes. I have my walking pad in the other room. I love that thing. Is that what you would do?
If it's something that's manageable and doable, I would say optimally walking for approximately 10 minutes after each of your 4 meals, even the post-workout ones, would be ideal because it's going to help with digestion, blood sugar regulation, and all of those things. And so I think it's a great way to kind of break it up. I always think of this, like when it comes to fat loss, like cardio is your needle mover. Cardio meaning, and cardio is a different metric than steps. And this is again why never hit plateaus. Don't know her. So, anyways, but like you have steps. You have like if there's certain things I'm like, I just don't understand people sometimes. But you have steps. The steps are what you are walking and doing. I think steps are great for longevity, overall health, well-being, getting outside, blood sugar regulation after your meals. Love it. Steps are not a fat loss agent. They're really not. Like sometimes I watch people online who are like, Dennis and I were watching a YouTuber talking about like getting ready for a bodybuilding prep and dieting. And he was like, I'm not even doing any cardio. And he was doing like 15,000 steps. And I'm like, do you know how realistic that is for anyone who's not a YouTuber to get 15,000 steps
Exactly,
in?
bro. Yeah,
Like
that's not for me.
a lot of moms and people who work at a desk, whatever it is, like they're so busy, like with life going on, that it's so unrealistic, and that's just not a that it's not I don't think it's realistic. It's not most effective. At the end of the day, when you're walking, like I always tell people, like you're probably like you're every 1,000 steps you're walking, you're maybe burning like 40 calories, something in the ballpark. Depends on your body weight, your size, how big of a human you are carrying around. You could just do 10 minutes on the stairs. You could just do like 20 minutes on the elliptical. You could
Agreed.
just do like Like, get your heart rate up. Cardio, I like to use cardio as a gauge. It's like your heart rate is above 135. You're actually like, you're, because fat cells, I did a training on this one time. One of my clients was like, what actually happens to your fat? Do you just like sweat it out? And I was like, no, you oxidize your fat. And so when your heart rate is up, when you're breathing, when you're oxidizing fat cells and shrinking them down because they never go away, you're doing that when you are exerting more energy and pushing yourself. And so doing cardio is going to be a great lever to that. What happens is why I say they're separate variables. It's because sometimes people will say like, I increased my cardio and I increased my steps and it didn't even do anything. I was like, no, you just increased your cardio, but you're counting your cardio as steps. So it's the same thing. If you want to use steps as a fat loss agent and something to help move the needle, it has to be separate from cardio. If steps are just a byproduct and you're like, I'm just doing it for overall health, well-being, longevity, great. Then include it in your cardio. It's fine.
Then I want to touch on this. I know you only have a few minutes. If you're me, though, I do this. This is going to be caloric deficit, right? And after 3 weeks, 4 weeks, right? I'm losing a pound a week, which is exactly ideal. But I don't do actual cardio that you just pointed out. Wouldn't it be ideal to just keep doing this until I do need to add cardio in? Or would you add cardio in right away? You see what I'm saying? Like, I've always been one, like, I did 75 hard and I had like tracked the shit out of it. But I didn't make my cardio intense, what we're talking about, till like halfway through because I was like, look, I'm just gonna let the scale keep going down. Then I noticed I wasn't. Instead of removing food, I just then added real cardio in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's important, like you're saying, it's a different variable. So it's like, hey, I'm toggling the food variable. Okay, I'm toggling the cardio variable, whatever it is. You could do it. Like, that's a good way to do it, to where, like, hey, I'm just gonna manipulate food. And then once I realize that I'm at my new maintenance, essentially you stop losing, right? Like, let's say you get down and you're like, I'm at 200 pounds, right? So I'm at 200 pounds. These macros aren't in a deficit anymore. They're your new maintenance macros. And so if you're like, I want to be 190, I'm like trying to look real good for the wedding, right? Like, okay, cool. Then you can add cardio in. Then add cardio in as a lever you can. There's nothing wrong with starting with both. I generally will, when I'm like talking to someone and we're creating their game plan, how much time do you have? How much motivation do you have? Are you someone that does really well with like those deadlines and phases? Because some people are like, I would love to like use my momentum. I'm super motivated. I'm going to do the cardio. I'm going to get the steps. I really love seeing the results. I love the dopamine hit from the scale going down. Boom, get there. Like, let's get to 190, whatever your number is. And then you can work on just like a maintenance there and you can taper off. Some people are like, I like a slow and steady cut and I want to like continually cut. And it's like seeing the scale go down a half a pound is fine with me. And so I think that's where personality traits and what you desire out of it is going to help increase adherence over the long run. So you get to a goal and you're able to sustain it. Like, this is even Dennis and I with preps. Like, Dennis prefers like a longer prep where it's a little bit slower over time. I'm more like get in, get out kind of girl. Like, I'm like, if it's past 16 weeks, I'm like, oh my, I can't. I'm over it.
Hey, it's 2:30. Thank you. You're amazing. This was very, very helpful. I hope other people are going to enjoy this. I'll have you on. Hopefully next week we'll have another topic. I'm getting so much out of these, so thank you so much for your time. You're
Of
awesome.
course, I loved being on, and we'll talk soon.